come to the philosophy in Oxford. Americans, Canadians, Australians, the white commonwealths, plus America. Occasionally, people come from Latin America. Italians, French, I don't have a single case of a French philosopher learning philosophy here, coming to study English philosophy. Dali
under. You know, even in other fields that I know, they're usually late. I mean, they follow, they invent new schools 10, 20, 30 years after...
Other people, who? Other the French. Well, look, nobody in New England has ever heard the name Yankelevich. There's no need to hear it, but in fact nobody has. Ask any English philosopher, does the word Yankelevich mean anything to you? Means nothing. Does the word Lalande mean anything to you? Means nothing.
But if there was, you would have translated him. I mean, after all, British philosophers knew French. And if you...
Some did, not
they, some, all right. And had they discovered...
Yes, well, Bergson was. Bergson was translated.
And even Peyrever...
Could have said, hadn't he? Not much of a philosopher, but still.
All
right. Yes, but still. Many historians, philosopher of science in a way, historian of science.
Yes.
But, yes, what?
Enough ideas, I mean.
Yes. I'm trying to think what other French philosophers were translated, if any. In the 20th century? Well, there was a man called Raymond Poulain, who was an authority on Locke. He came to Oxford, talked to people about Locke. Sort of scholarship.
Well, there are no great philosophers nowadays. There are sociologists or theory of literature. You have there the Derridas and the Lacans.
They're all called, they're all called, Derrida, they're all supposed to be philosophers.
Yes, and they are, yes or no, but they are translated. Which means?
Yes. But if you ask who is the greatest, the only French philosopher of the 20th century who ever crossed the channel, Bergson certainly, Merleau-Ponty did, he was read by Charles Taylor and various other people, Husserl was read a bit in England, but among French, certainly people I met, what's his name? No, it's a Jewish philosopher. Worried about Kierkegaard. Etude Kierkegaardien, whom I knew, quite a nice man, who I used to meet in America. Never in England. I never heard of him. Jean Val. Totally. Name not known. I met him and rather liked him because quite a nice man, but Eric Weil was a German philosopher in France. He meant nothing here.
He was a good teacher.
I'm sure.
He came to Israel for a year once. He was professor in Vienna.
Mm-hmm.
He was
but Hegel is what he taught.
Now, when did you first vote?
Politically? Wait a moment. I'm trying to cast my... When was I first entitled to vote? I was 21. 21, I think it might be. Then it was 18. May have been. But if so, I certainly didn't vote when I was at school or my first year in Oxford. I certainly voted in 19... Wait a moment. I voted for the Oxford, representative of Oxford University. I don't think I voted before I came to All Souls.
There could be only once you could.
Before that, yes. 1932. I could. 1930 I could. There was no election then. There was an election 29, I couldn't. 31, there was the famous national government. I don't know who the Oxford candidates were. No idea. Nobody known. No known people.
You voted only for the Oxford candidates, not...
Then I voted for the ones for the city of Oxford. I don't think I did, no. I don't think I did. The Oxford University candidates, very much.
And you don't remember?
Oh, yes. Oh, Lord, yes. In 1931, I don't know. No, the same ones. They're always the same in Oxford. Single transfer of a vote. It's not like the other kind of system. The Conservative candidates were Hugh Cecil and Professor Charles Ehrman from All Souls.
What was
the candidate? Success. The Liberal candidate was Gilbert Murray. The Labour candidate was Professor J.L. Stocks from Manchester, who had been in Oxford. Hugh Cecil used to roll up an enormous vote. Gilbert Murray came next. But all the second votes of Hugh Cecil went to Ehrman, who used to get the bottom vote, was elected. So they sat in Parliament together, all through. Certainly, absolutely. Until, wait a moment, first time that was broken was when Hugh Cecil became a Lord Peer. He was Lord Quickswood, went to Eton as provost. Then we had an election in which the A.P. Herbert was an independent candidate. And he actually defeated the nominee of the Conservative caucus, which was an elected candidate in Oxford since the days of Charles II. The Conservative candidate was the principal of Harford College, a very nasty man called Cutwell, who forfeited his deposit. That was unheard of. The Conservative caucus was destroyed in 34. Was an election then? Round about then. Or some kind of election. When MacDonald resigned.
When Baldwin,
yes. About then. Conservatives came in. The big vote.
Well, 34 and 35.
That's it. A.P. Herbert was elected in place of Hugh Cecil. Then finally, Ehrman went, and then we had a very exciting election in which the official Conservative candidate was the Regent for the Medicine, Sir Farquhar Buzzard. The Churchillian candidate was Professor Lindemann, and the Popular Front candidate was Salter, who then came fresh from League of Nations, was a liberal. The chairman of his committee was Cole, you see. And then, of course, the famous election was in 38, which was Lindsay and Hogg. That was entirely on Munich. We all voted like mad then.
That's what I was going to ask. 38, you were very involved.
Deeply involved.
And you voted for an issue and not for the man.
Absolutely.
Earlier, was it also for, I mean?
Yes, also.
Also. And you voted Liberals?
Myself. Yes. Now I voted Labour. Certainly. In the case of 35, there was just a Popular Front candidate. Liberals and Labour chose the same man. Just they did Lindsay afterwards. 38 the same. Liberals and Labour combined. Plus dissident Conservatives, plus Macmillan. And Heath, all these people, all of them voted against Hogg. You see, and then they came down to Oxford. They made speeches. Heath was president of the Union. So that didn't arise. I voted Labour in 1945 and ceased to vote Labour after that because of Bevin's Palestine policy, and died for that reason. When Wilson was candidate, wait, we're not talking about the election, or the future elections. I think I voted in every direction. I don't think I ever voted conservative. But I voted liberal to prevent them from forfeiting their deposit. Simply as a kind of sympathy vote. I did not vote for my pupil, Monty Woodhouse, who was number two in the Home Office, who was member of Oxford, and then became head of Chatham House. I knew him very well. He was certainly. I taught him. You could have said. No, I couldn't vote for him. Who else did I vote for?
And lately, when the SDP and the...
I was the SDP voter. As you would expect.
Now, in the 30s...
I never vote Labour again. And certainly not. Well, it was a long time. As long as Bevin was there, I couldn't. Who succeeded Bevin? Wait a moment. Bevin died when?
Morrison succeeded in before he died. He became the leader.
But I mean, there was no election. There was no...
The election, there were in 50, and then immediately again in 51.
Wait a minute. First was Attlee. Then there was...
No, Attlee first was Prime Minister all along.
Wait, until 51. Until 51.
And in 50 there were elections. And they came back with reduced majority.
Labour. Okay. And then 51, Churchill. Who did I vote for in 51? Liberal, I'm sure. Whoever it was, there is no longer university vote. That was abolished. 51, then we had 50...
Now, when Macmillan was candidate, after all, Macmillan was a liberal conservative.
Oh, certainly.
So, I mean, you might have voted for him.
I might. But I don't think I did. I don't think... I liked him as a friend of his, but I didn't vote for him, no. I could easily have done that. I can't remember who the others were. The candidates were very dim for the city. Who were they? They were nobodies.
The liberal, was it John Drummond or...
What? No, no. Who?
I mean, the head of the liberal party.
Who, in parliament? Well, this...
Are you speaking about the candidates in Oxford?
Yes, yes.
Would you take into account the personality of the...
I'm afraid I do. Some people don't. I'm always criticized for it by serious people. I do.
I'm sure that...
I do.
I mean, you wouldn't vote Labour, probably, if you hated Bevin, if there was a good candidate here. Even if there was one. Which means sometimes...
But there was a... More yes, but there was a very good conservative, whom I greatly admired, and might have voted for it, certainly. I was not bound by any party. I was a floating voter. I did not vote for the Senate's candidate. What was his name?
Evan
Duart. I thought he was too dull. Too conventional. He's quite a nice man. But I can't remember who defeated him. Was it Woodhouse?
Monty Woodhouse the first time.
Yes.
And I can't remember the second time. And the second time, apparently, was a good
Peckham. Who is now in Parliament.
The first time it was Monty Woodhouse. Now, during those days, do you remember, this famous debate on king and country, you know, in the Union, was it a really...
I can tell you about that. The original debate about king and country, I never heard of. Probably it was, I don't know. I can't remember who took part in it. The Union was not at the center of my interest. Some people probably did pay attention. That was the occasion when I think it was Jode. Jode was against King Country. Hogg did not.
Hogg came from outside.
Yeah, but he only took part in the original debate, did he? The original debate?
Or the second one.
Second, possibly. But wait, second was a business. Second is quite a thing. In the first one, certainly Jode on one side. And I think somebody rather unimportant was any other. Two of them, of course. Like Edward Stanley. Was hardly a politician at all. Anyway, identity disappeared. Then why it became notorious is because Randolph Churchill printed a leading article and splashed it across the pages of the Daily Mail. That's why it became an issue. Then, when the second debate occurred about expunging the original influence, then there was frantic excitement. I was already at All Souls. That was in spring 1933. I was elected in the autumn 1932. No, it was not. And in 1933. But next term. After the original term. Spring 1933. Maybe in summer, but not later.
I think it was later.
I think it wasn't. And I remember getting to vote. I couldn't get into the hall because the enormous number of people milling outside. Tremendous excitement. So as if England was going to declare the Republic. And my colleague, now Lord Jay, came running about with a huge kitchen knife and might have stabbed somebody at any moment. Frantic excitement. I went with a member. My guest at dinner in All Souls was a man called Mead, who afterwards got a Nobel Prize for economics, a professor and so on. James Mead was an old friend. And oh yes. That was quite a business.
Now, all this series of...
That's when communism got going in Oxford. About then.
So during those years, you had... did you remember Ethiopia as an issue?
Very much. Very strange, let me tell you. Absolutely. It was very, very... I was deep issue. People were very, very strongly... I did everybody. All my junior colleagues also, other than Hogg and Wilberforce, were conservatives, were very anti-Italian. But now I'll tell you a story. Simon was foreign secretary. Simon was a fellow of All Souls. Used to come here at the weekends quite a lot. The junior conversation All Souls was entirely free. And these politicians used to come down with our friends, Halifax, Simon, Geoffrey Dawson, Amory, a man called Steele Maitland, who died in 1932, the minister, conservative minister at one time. And then you see, who else? Wait a moment. Oh, Lionel Curtis, who created Chatham House. There was a group. Dougal Malcolm, who was the head of the South Africa Company, after Rhodes. They brought people like Bakken and Lothian. Never you could think of. And Boer generals, all kinds of people, smuts. They talked absolutely freely in front of the junior fellows. In their own rooms, may have plotted. But at dinner and after dinner, conversation was totally free and people could ask them questions. And the junior fellows always outnumbered the senior ones. They were quite arrogant. A lot of chutzpah. And one day, we surrounded Simon and said, why do you not impose oil sanctions? He said, you young men want to impose oil sanctions. I can tell you why not. Supposing we do, then Mussolini may fall And then what? Communism? You said it. You would never have said it. It was never reported. It remained buried in All Souls. Christopher Hill was then at All Souls. He heard it. He was a communist then. Nothing, didn't, never leaked. Would have done him incredible harm. Never leaked. Club principles were observed in the most mysterious way. Very English. Couldn't happen in any other country. Can't imagine France. Radicals not reporting what the reactionists said. But it was exciting to be in All Souls then, because you learned, you knew how the governing class governed. It all became, one discovered a great deal about the methods and the people, how they talked, what they said. The whole texture of the government of England was revealed here.
But it really was. It's not a legend.
No. No. I don't say that Munich or anything. I mean, more than Clifton, yes. Because nobody knew the guests were certain. I mean, the real Munichites were here.
Now, the young generation, the young fellows, most of them were anti?
Yes. Most were anti. Let me try and recite to you who they were. And then you'll see. Now, who was I elected with? Immediately before me, 3 years before me, Sparrow and Rickett, both conservatives. Rickett was civil servant. Then Jay and Bowen, socialists. Then Quinton Hogg, conservative, Ron Wurries, left wing. Then, with me, Wilberforce, conservative, Riley, foreign office, didn't vote, myself. Then, Austin, voted Labour. Then came Conor Neal, who voted Labour, there was the foreign office, resigned over Munich, the only person to remember foreign office who resigned, because he was third secretary in Berlin, and Neville Henderson was to watch for him. And with him, Woosley, voted Labour, philosopher. Then came Christopher Hill, early communist, and Michael Latham, son of a famous judge in Australia, drove a lorry for the Spanish Republic. Then came Stuart Hampshire, clearly Labour, Michael Routh, Labour, A-R-O-U-T-H. Then came A.J. Brown, an economist, Labour, and Michael Cox, I don't know how he voted, medieval historian. Then came Fawcett, my pupil Fawcett, Labour, I would say. There's liberal maybe with Labour. Then with him, man called, forgotten his name, who was a communist, turned out, killed in the war, turned out to be a communist. Anyway, he's from Bagel, philosopher. And Ron Butler, probably conservative, maybe conservative, may not, not clear. And then came the war. So that's the list.
It's incredible. I mean, the majority is Labour.
Absolutely.
In the
third. Absolutely. Clever boys of Labour.
Now, the conservatives were not necessarily abusers or...
No. No, that wasn't it. Quinton Hogg was. But that's another story.
Now, in those debates, I wonder, I mean...
I can tell you who was not elected also. Not elected were Bill Williams, whom you wouldn't know, the Secretary of Rosehouse, Wilson, Harold, Trevor Roper, I'm trying to think, people afterwards became well known. I got Frank Figgis, who wouldn't know his civil servant, who was sort of ECOEC, all that. Sir Frank. Yes, he was not in my year. I defeated him, I regret to say. And Gore Booth was not. It's also the same year. And Tommy Hodgkin. Never forgave me for defeating him.
They were all the same year.
Freddie, Tommy Hodgkin, Gore Booth. Same year, yes. Same year, yes. Certainly. Michael Adler, who afterwards went to China as a communist. Saul Adler.
Ah, yes,
that's amazing. His brother.
Saul.
You mean Solomon?
Saul Adler.
Solomon?
Shaul.
Shaul is a brother. Shaul is a scientist. Exactly. His brother. Only because he's a guest of his brother. Saul, S-O-L. Adler was a columnist in New College. He was an economist in England, didn't get on with people, clever boy, very, Yiddish speaking, and went to America, where he taught. And then during the war, he went to China with the American mission, was that economist, came back to Harvard, became professor at Harvard, but during the McCarthy period, came back to England, and worked with Joan Robinson in Cambridge, and then went to China, disappeared, and worked for Mao, and he's still there. And he invited Shaul to visit him. That's what you're thinking of. You see?
Now, among your friends, have you had any friends, close friends, who were appeasers
No.
And could you predict? I mean...
No. Nobody. Nobody.
Is it because people who were your friends couldn't be appeasers, or...
Just didn't work that way. There were people who took no interest in politics. Who should say, I don't know, my friend Bernard Spencer, a poet. My friend Stephen Spencer on the left, of course. I don't know, I'm trying to think who was not uninterested in politics in the 30s, whom I knew, totally uninterested. Anthony Blunt, in 1934, had no interest in politics, but was would not have been the appeaser. By that time, of course, already a communist. What did I know those early years? I've forgotten who my friends were.
Let's say left, I mean, people who are on the left side or certain kind of political attitude...
Leonard Shapiro, man of the right, appeasement, no. No Jew could be.
No.
Well, Obelisha probably was. That's another matter.
Not sure.
But certainly Sassoon was, Philip.
But among the conservatives...
Herbert Samuel was. He made a speech in the House of Lords in 1938 or 9, in which he said, "The words of Mr. Churchill are those of a Malay run amok." Herbert said he was.
That late.
If you look it up in Hansard, I remember the Malay run amok.
Now, among the conservatives, I mean, what would make one appeaser or anti-appeaser? I mean, was there something in the making? I mean, could you generalize?
No. I think partly, of course, people who hated communism.
Among your friends, I think.
Well, Jeffrey Dawson. That is all anti-communism. Straight anti-communism.
But So that's rational. That's political.
Yes.
I thought, look,
better Germany than Russia. Otherwise, extreme fear of war. So again, quite rational if you like. Pro-German sentiment. People just liked Bose, President Putin, liked the Germans. He was an appeaser. Typical kind. Chips Channel, who was another friend of mine, adored the Germans and the Wittelsbachs and Bavaria and all that, you see? I'm just thinking what their pieces were. In Oxford, the head of Queen's College, Hodgkin, Tommy Hodgkin's father, typical appeaser. He was a Quaker of origin, but he was expelled by the Quakers because he was in favor of the Boer War. He made a famous statement. In 1940, he was sitting at his high table, and there was Ettinghausen there. And he said, you know, if the Germans win, but April 41, maybe already in June, it may not be so bad. After all, in France after 1870, they recovered pretty soon after that. I mean, it was pretty awful, but nothing like what they feared. Then he suddenly saw Walter Ettinghausen. He said, I suppose it will be quite so nice for you. That's a good remark. Not quoted by Ettinghausen. So Guy Chilver, who was a friend of mine at Queen's, quoted that to me afterwards. To show what a horrible man he was. Hodgkin.
Now, of course, there could be conservatives that would be anti-appeasers, but on Spain, would support...
David Sissel was my greatest friend. One of his passionate conservative, violent anti-appeaser. And all his brothers. His one brother. The whole lot. I don't recognize my country. That is the line. I don't know what is happening. But passionate.
But it wouldn't imply necessarily...
Sparrow, warden of this college. Rock rib conservative. 100% anti-appeaser. He was a friend of mine.
But it won't imply necessarily that in Spain he would support...
he supported Franco, of course. Oh yes, nothing to do with it. That's Churchill did start with. Love Cooper, to begin with. But my father, 1938, he said exactly what Bloom said. Shame and relief. But relief after Munich. I felt no relief.
But one can see.
Yes. Of course one can see. Bloom said it.
And it was abdication was an issue.
Not really. Oh, people felt very strongly. It's entirely a joke to me, but somebody next to a common room threw a glass of wine at somebody else. And so on. You see, it was talked about. I didn't feel the slightest, no feelings. Roy Harrod went round the London to Oxford train, canvassing people in the compartments, when it suddenly appeared in the papers about Mrs. Simpson, what they felt. He found most of them were in favour of the Prince of Wales. No, it wasn't an issue for me. I was very pleased that he resigned. I thought he'd have been, I already felt he was a terrible menace. The Nazi connections were known. He'd been to Germany. You see, it was clear, it was that way. And I had a feeling that...
Among the conservatives, Anglicans and Catholics, let's say, according to your observation, would it influence the politics? I'm trying to find out other kinds of generalization, nobility and middle class, or let's say graduates of... Is there any difference in general between Etonians and Wiccanists, let's say, in
religious politics? In religious politics. Otherwise, yes. Otherwise, very considerable.
Otherwise, I know.
I could have told you exactly. Politically, no, you can't say that. You can say the Whigmist Socialist in, I mean, why not?
Oh, yes.
I mean, Hater voted Socialist.
Grossman and...
Grossman, of course. Jay. Douglas Jay. Well, I mean, Gaitskill.
Gaitskill. And
Kenneth Kennedy was also... Kennedy was certainly.
There are
all victims. Yeah, a lot.
I thought that's why I got the impression that Winchester produced more socialists than
very likely, much more Rennist, because they're more Rennist, more morally convulsed. Etonians are more light-hearted and more detached, more sardonic, in a sense more cynical. You see, I'm trying to think of Etonian socialists existed, of course.
There are
now, but then, for example, Dalton is. And now there is that Maverick figure, you know what I mean, Damdiel. You know Daliel,
it's called.
Yes. Diel. Yes, yes.
He's
Italian. Italian. Steam independence. Yes. They seem really like. Yes. That's the point. Total independence. Is there other man than who else meeting in those days? Italian socialists. They certainly existed. Fridia.
And you want to sell the phone
today? Certainly. Right, let's stop here. We'll meet in a minute.